Boat Show, episode number 457. My name is John Morgan. Cold Coffee is with me today here in Las Vegas, but that's not it. No, we're bringing in extra today. Cutman Mike Afanasyev is with us as well, Las Vegas Fire Department member as well. But you know I'm best from getting in there in the octagon, saving some fights, healing up these fighters so they can keep going, and we know him for getting together and drinking an award-winning Pabst Blue Ribbon. Frosted beverage. What's going on, man?
How are you, buddy?
It's good. Good to see you. By the way, it's early afternoon today, and look, we're all off. It's the holidays, and so we're some of us may be working slightly, but we're getting together for a few frosty beverages, and these guys are trying to put the blame on me, but I just want to let the record reflect it did not take much convincing to get you guys to hop into these award-winning Pabst Blue Ribbons today.
I was always told, though, somebody offers you something in their house, you take it,
That's it. Just being a polite guest.
Be respectful.
Just being a polite guest. Well, you can hear it in my voice, by the way. I'll just go ahead and get that out of the way early. I'm not quite back to 100%. I'm getting close to 100%, but the illness is starting to fade away. It's been weeks now, man. It's been weeks.
It's been a long time.
I actually did finally go to the doctor because my kid was getting kind of bad, and my wife was getting kind of bad. So I was like, let's just go and see if they can give us some medicine. Tested positive for flu type A, they said, or flu A. I don't know if it's type A or just flu A. They name it every – I don't know. Tested positive for that. Did not test positive for COVID, although a lot of the crew that I was with over the previous week, they tested positive for COVID. So I think maybe it was in there or something like that. But anyway, I just want to say I'm getting back to health, but I apologize if my voice is a little bit weird. And maybe cracks a little bit here and there, sounds a little bit nasally. I apologize, but dude, this stuff is crazy. You're out in the community, man. I guess you probably don't get called for sick people very often, but it feels like everybody I know is sick right now.
Yeah, actually, surprisingly, people and can't breathe, they're nausea, vomiting, things like that. I mean, yeah, people call for everything, and you just don't know. Yeah, there's a bad flu going around though, for sure. Coworkers and friends,
missing days.
They say it's not. It's no joke. It's lasting, a little while.
It is, dude. It was. We were working CFSC match day. Very cool event on UFC Fight Pass. Mizzou to the Lou. I thought about you.
It's still a cool name.
I thought about you, Cole Coffee. Just because, man, it was. It had that college. It had that college environment. I know how much you love college sports.
Yeah, you know what
I mean? Like they brought the teams out onto the stage and the theater, and it was a home game for Missouri, so it was all the Mizzou people.
I'm sure the crowd was nuts.
Crowd was nuts. 3,000 people in this
That's
theater,
awesome.
But it had that real like college vibe to it. So I thought about you a lot because it's we've been picking out these unique environments. We went to like this horse sanctuary. We've done some stuff on campuses, whatever. But this theater was just packed, and it was Missouri versus Illinois, so it was a rivalry game. Programs that are kind of they were playing. I said last week it was football. They were playing basketball the next day, not football.
Oh, okay.
It makes sense. But yeah.
So anyway,
it was a cool weekend, and it was a really cool environment. I thought about you. But in the truck, it was so funny because with college wrestling, I work on the production side, and everybody in the truck, everybody's coughing. There's no way any of us are getting out of this healthy. Whatsoever.
You're all packed sick.
Oh yeah.
Let's just have a Kleenex as you leave the truck. Here's your sanitary wipes. Here's your Kleenex, and we'll see you. We'll see you in the at the hospital.
It was cracking up the whole time. We're all just getting out of sick. So yeah, it's going around. So hopefully everybody's staying healthy. It's out there. All over the country. It's not just here.
I was going to say. Well, even with that, I think if you would take some time off, you could probably heal yourself a little bit instead of hopping in planes and traveling from here to there to here to there. Just saying.
You're onto something
saying.
There. You're
Just
onto
saying.
Something there. I think you might be onto something there.
I think one of the things that doctors, what is that thing that doctors prescribe? It starts with an R. Rest.
Rest.
Is it rest? Rest and recovery.
I love
something?
When they're like, "Can you, hey man?" It was funny. First of all, when we went to the doctor to get looked at, the doctor like she got done. She's like, "Do you need a note for work?" I'm like, "Yeah, that doesn't work." And I don't need a note. I'm good. But it is funny because they'll tell you like, "Hey, why don't you just sit tight for a week or something?" You're like, "Yeah, okay,
not gonna happen.
That's never gonna happen." So
no.
Week 2 of 3 with no UFC. Normally,
the
three of us would all be seeing each other at the Apex. So what do? We have no lives, so we're like, hey, let's just see each other here instead. You're cheering. What about you? 2 of 3, is it
Well, he
is
gets
it a welcome
paid to be
break?
There. He gets paid extra money to go. It's just status quo when I go. I don't get any extra
that
money for showing up there.
Are you missing the routine? Are you enjoying the little time off, the little break?
It's kind of double-edged sword, I guess, because you – enjoy the time off. But you're like, man, when are we going to go see some fights again? And that Apex, the intimate environment there,
yeah,
is just impressive. You know, just hearing the coaches and the small crowd and thing. I mean, you hear everything. So I will say it is nice, you know, that they don't have the actual New Year's Eve show,
because yes,
it's so packed when you're trying to get in and out of T-Mobile and
Down to the strip. And
right. And then fighters checking in the week of Christmas. I think, yep, that, you know, as a promotional company, I can't speak for them, but I would think they're like, all right, cool, we can end this a little early, give everybody a break. Guns, yeah, blazing for the next season, which is already stacking up to be.
Oh, it's going to be. It's funny. So two things. Number one, I am with you on that. The no New Year's Eve show has been the greatest blessing of the ESPN era, right, where they don't want the shows because they got too much college football going on. Like, I love that. There was nothing worse than, you know, like today. I mean, right now, today's Wednesday. It would be media day, right? You know, yep. I mean, that tomorrow would be a press conference. And it was like, especially having kids and, mm-hmm, you know, I mean, you know, just like the day after Christmas being like, all right, well, I had fun, guys. Bye. You know what I mean? Like getting more family time. That is awesome. So that's a huge one. But it's funny you said something, because you said how much you like the Apex. And I feel like me and Cole Coffee are in the minority.
That was so funny, because I was going to bring it up as well.
It's
after
so, right,
said it.
We're so much in the minority. And the majority of the media out there, and I mean, I see the messaging all the time.
And fans. Like, a lot of the YouTube fans are very vocal.
They're like, I hate it. I got to get rid of the Apex. It's got to go away. And me and Cole Coffee like it. And I think a big part of it is just it's so damn close to our house. I mean, right, true, now, as we sit here at the Casa de Cole Coffee, I mean, I could damn near see the Apex, yeah, from here if I looked out the window. The convenience. And so sometimes I feel like our perspective is skewed a little bit because it's so convenient for us that we're like, dude, don't get rid of the Apex. I love the Apex. And I'm sure, I mean, obviously you're a Las Vegas guy too. The convenience probably has something to do with it. But you like the environment too, right? Because I like that. I mean, there's nothing better than a huge knockout and 18,000 people go crazy, and there's, right, you know, and you see like people looking around like, oh, that is amazing. But there is something cool about, man, I can hear every little thing that happens. I can hear the coaches. But I like that. I feel like I'm so much smarter. But so it's funny that you lay that out there. You're like, I dig this environment.
Yeah, no, it's great. I dig both. They both have their place, you, yeah, know, because there is nothing like sitting in the stands when – the fight's going at it, and you've got 18,000-19,000 people screaming. You can't even hear yourself think. But then on the flip side, you don't have that, but you still have that. You know, you hear every word that the coaches are saying. You hear the commentators. You hear everything, yep, that's going on. Family members, you know, getting a front row seat.
Yeah.
So they both have their place.
I mean, I definitely think we can all agree that we've seen moments in a fight where – so a fight's going a particular way. You see a fighter getting egged on by the crowd. The crowd's pushing them forward, and you see them acknowledge the crowd. They raise the hand. They play to the crowd. They dig deep, and they dig in there. But a lot of times, you know, you see still great action in the Apex. You don't have the crowd, but you see that – because a fighter – it's not like a fighter's going to fight differently if he's in the Apex or whether he's in the T-Mobile.
Right.
But you do add in the factor of, okay, maybe there can be a little crowd involvement that helps give them that extra little boost. But also, then they can't hear the coaches like they can hear them in the Apex. There's always pluses. But what's weird is when I see a lot of people bitch about Apex shows, they're always bringing up, there's no fans there in crowd. I'm like, what do you care about? What are you watching on TV? Right. Are you waiting for the fucking fan reaction shots? And then you're like, oh, thank God I tuned into this pay-per-view. I finally, yeah, got to see some crowd. Or are they just waiting to see those moments where the fighter is maybe standing up like, yes, like, are you entertained? You know,
well, and
it's just so weird that they play so much in that. I will acknowledge there are times we've seen fighters fight a little bit more animated because of the crowd.
Of course.
But to think that they're going to see less from a fighter because it's in a quieter environment as from the T-Mobile.
Yeah.
It's just crazy.
Yeah.
It's just crazy.
Well, and the thing is, it's the same people that are like, oh, this card sucks. Like, I don't even want to, yeah, see this card. You know, like, well, it's in the Apex because you're not going to have 18,000. Yeah. If you put it somewhere else, 18,000 people wouldn't show up. Yeah. You know what I mean?
And it's a fight night. I mean, because even when you used to hear Dana lay out the things, he was like, they were back when there were multiple layers where there was like a fight night and then Fox cards and then there was like the ESPNs and yada, yada, yada. The fight nights, a lot of times, were supposed to be these ones where you had the up-and-coming guys coming on, earning their keep, earning into places where they were contenders. So it's like not every show is going to be a pay-per-view level show, but don't hold that against the Apex because you think the Apex is only whatever. I mean, they have so many fighters. You have to give these fighters a card, and not every card is going to be worthy of them paying all that extra money to put at a giant venue or to even take on the road to travel. So for people to just hate on it for just the fact that there's an absence of crowd and the thinking that it's so different, it just strikes me just so odd that I'm – and it's always their comment. It's always the comment of like, man, you never hear any – you never hear like the crowd. You never see whatever. And I'm always like, well, just what are you watching?
Right.
Like what makes a fun event for you? Like you're not happy unless you see other people react – you want to see their emotions – and match it to your own, and then you feel like, yeah, that was a good fight. Like, I can watch the Apex show and say, that was a hell of a fight, and I don't need justification from some fan in the crowd standing up and cheering. And, like, I can make my own decision. But sometimes I wonder why people are so agitated about the Apex, especially, too. I mean, like, just in terms of cost. If the UFC can save money, hopefully that means they can turn money towards a fighter.
Well, that's what trips me out, right?
They can pay more money
You want to see more money for fighters. Well, hold on.
Anything that we're saying, hey, by the way, we did 10 Apex and we paid 10 guys more.
I mean, you think about the money that's saved, man, and it's not just, you know, it's not just people, the arena or whatever. Think just the travel costs alone getting their
arena
own staff.
Arena costs, security costs,
it's insane. So I just wish people would realize, look, there's a place for both. You know what I mean? Yeah. There's a place for both.
100%.
It's
like they
want
to call for
landscape.
The Apex to be eradicated and never do an Apex show. And I'm like, that doesn't make it. It doesn't make sense business wise. And I would be really pissed if I couldn't just drive 5 minutes down the road to work in Apex. So I will tell you, yes, I am biased, but I also think that I've seen hella great fights. Like, if you look at the Dan Hooker Poirier fight that took place, that was absolutely sick.
Probably the greatest fight in the history of the Apex. Right?
I'm like, dude, good fights happen there. Like, don't blame the venue just because it doesn't give you whatever, because we're still getting great fights, but I don't want it to go away because I like being able to drive down the street. That being said, sure, if they want to travel more, that's great. But I just don't anticipate they're ever going to get it to where they're on the road every weekend. The cost is just insane. Yep. And if you want to yell at the UFC and say that they're not paying the fighters, put that extra money on them. If they're trying to meet the amount of money that they're making now, and of course people already say what they're meeting now is too much, like there should be more going towards the fighters. But if the UFC is like, well, we always got to keep this line – if you increase the production costs and everything else, how are they ever going to – and they're still trying to meet that line. It's not like it's going to be more money for the fighters,
right?
You know? So, I don't know. It's – I like the Apex shows. I like the environment. I like the –
We're the only three. You know? We're the only three.
He gets a lot of TV time when they're at the Apex.
I was thinking about this as we were getting together today. Like, I know how busy you are on Fight Night, right? I think people – most hardcore fans probably realize, but if you don't, like, to think that your role is just cut man, right? I mean, you've got to go in and wrap hands. There's, you know what I mean? You guys all kind of rotate together. There's a lot more than just, like, I just sit there and then I go in. I mean, you guys are running the whole night. But at, like, the end of the year like this, you know, do you sit back and look? Because sometimes I feel like as a journalist, the cards kind of, like, run together. But we're just observing them and talking about them. You're actually, like, taking part in them. You're actually in there. You're actually taking an active role versus just observing and discussing what happened. You know what I mean? So, like, do you ever think back on, like, the fights you were involved in, or, you know, the moments you're like, damn, I did a good job that night, or, man, you know what? I don't think I did a good job that night. I could have done something better here. That, like, do you take the time to stop back, or does it all blend together for you too?
Some of the fights, like, I honestly don't recall working. Yeah. Friends like, dude, I saw you working this fight. I watched the replay. And I was like, ooh, I did.
It runs together, bro.
It does run together. Yeah. As far as work good and bad, like, I critique myself a lot because it's the only way we can get better. You know, and I'm like, man, I wish I would have done that or this. Or maybe I know that maybe I could have done just slightly better in my own mind. The rest of the world wouldn't know, and the fight, you know, continues. But there's always a way to improve, and I'll reach out to, you know, with guys like Robin Rowe, who just great experience, Rudy Hernandez, House, you know, I'll talk to these people like, hey, you know, I think I should have done this or should have done that, or, you know, vice versa. Because you're always learning. I mean, the day you think you know how to do everything, you're
right.
And I don't care what your profession is, then it's time to move on because there's always something different that you can do. And each fight's different. You know, you fundamentally what we do on paper doesn't look that hard. It really doesn't. But you're doing a quick triage, and then there's so many variables. Okay, is the fighter going to sit, or are they going to stand, or are they going to be still? Is the coach going to dump a bunch of water on their head? Is this going to happen? And you got a camera person that's got to get – everybody has a role. And you're trying to blend in that role, you know, at the same time to ultimately do what you can do to ensure that that fighter is allowed to continue. And, you know, fortunately here in Las Vegas, we work with like the same ringside doctors all the time. They're awesome. They give us a chance to work. They'll stand over our head, you know, shoulder, kind of look at things. If they think, oh, you know, I might have to evaluate them. Or if the cuts stop, great. On the flip side, if the doctor spends, you know, 10, 15, 20, 30 seconds evaluating this cut, going back and forth.
Time that you're not able to treat it.
Correct. You know, see behind the eight ball.
Such a key. And I think that's so big about Nevada, and you hear people talk about it, but just the repetitions. And, you know, when organizations move around, whatever it may be, the UFC or anybody else, if it's a commission that doesn't do a lot of fights, and if it's a doctor that hasn't been in a lot of fights, because, look, it's combat. People are getting hurt. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to happen. But if they're freaking out, that causes an issue, right? And it's like, if you can just let everybody do their job, let everybody work. And I do think that's the biggest thing here in Las Vegas, that, man, those doctors, like, they come in, they've seen everything. So they don't freak out. They don't rush. They're like, hold on, let me at least get your time, you know what I mean?
Right.
And see what you can do with it, and then we make a decision. Not like, I got to get in there. And as you said, you see it sometimes, especially, and again, I'm not trying to pick on the smaller commissions. It's just, it's the comfortability that comes with recognition, repetition, I should say, is that they want to get in there before they really need to be in there. And like you said, it stops you from doing your job.
Yeah, there's so many dynamics to everything. It even related to my call, you know, as a fireman paramedic, where I have what I want to get done for the patient. The patient has in their perception what needs to be done. Then the family has their own opinion, you know, what needs to be done, you know, and same. And if you look at with the physicians, and they've got a role to look out, obviously, for fighter safety, and I guess indirectly we do too. And they've got to look at the fight at a different thing than the referee's looking at it differently, and the fighter and the coaches are looking at it. Everybody looks at the fight in a unique way. Ultimately, the end goal is we want this individual to, you know, to win. That's what the team does. So blending in with that, you know, and then if we go to places where I have don't have that rapport, I'll generally ask the doc, hey, if they get a bad cut, can you please just allow me to work? You can always look at the referee and ask for time. I've never once seen a referee say, nope, I'm not going to give you your time. You know, give us that opportunity. Just give us that opportunity. And it's just training experience. I mean, I look back at, I think I'm on my 13th, 14th year with the UFC, and I started working as a cut man in 05. Just how I work now compared just from that repetition, way different. Way different.
Yeah. I bet if you could time yourself with what you started to where you are now, you'd just – lap yourself immensely.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. But that just sets and reps. That's everything, yeah. Right? First time we tried to tie our shoes, we weren't probably really good at it.
Yeah.
Now we can do it, you know, blindfolded and half asleep.
Yeah.
What's the culture like among the community of cut men? And it seems like you guys are all friends and you all, but I wonder, like, in the beginning, is everybody willing to be like, hey, new kid, let me show you this technique, or, you know, let me show you what I do. Because I could also see people being, like, kind of protective. Like, I don't want anybody to know the way I wrap hands.
Yeah,
or I don't
you might get the call, and then I won't get the call.
Yeah, like, I don't want anybody to know the way my secret. Like, why is it that you can always get the cut stop and I can't? Well, I'm not telling anybody, because that's how I make sure that I keep getting booked for future shows. So is it a little bit like you got to earn some love, or is people – has it been, like, a pretty receptive community? Like, how have you found that journey?
No, it's a receptive community. I mean, I started off – I just boxed in the amateurs and I wrestled, and at the end of the day, I can't spell the word fight, but I had my
– F-I-T-E?
Yeah.
Thriller now. Yeah. Fight TV is Thriller TV now.
And so I just kind of transitioned into – after my last amateur fight, I fought a few times in the Police and Fire Olympics, which is a lot of fun, but I said, maybe I can work with – Jeff Mayweather was my coach. Maybe I can work with him and start learning the art of coaching. And then I thought, well, maybe we can learn how to wrap hands and stop cuts. And so he introduced me to Stitch, who taught me his way. And then over the years, you just pick up bits and pieces. And I'm not afraid to ask,
you know,
as well. So
that's such a key in anything, man. Don't be afraid. Like, don't pretend like you got to act smarter than you are. Like, don't be afraid to ask a question.
Yeah, as far as
– especially not in that role.
Yeah.
When, like, there's blood and bleeding and cuts, like – yeah, just admit you could be better and, like, please help me. Help my technique.
Yeah, no, and I think we constantly, you know, are trying to better ourselves, because at the end of the day, it's not about us. Nobody's coming to a fight to see me put Vaseline on a person's face for or stop a cut. It's, hey, they're here to see this man, this woman. That's what they're there for, to see.
100%.
So that's what we have to continue to work for, is like, hey, this is what it is. This is the only reason, you know, that these people are here. So now the community's been – you know, great, you know, and I'll help people as well, but also tell them the reality. Like, I can show you how to do this, but it doesn't mean automatically. It's like you go get your real estate license. Well, who knows your realtor? Who knows your this? You know, you've got to get out and spend time in the gyms and working. I just was fortunate to – a lot of cards just fell into place with people that I'd worked with, you know, and like Dewey Cooper gave me the opportunity to work with him. Never met the guy before. And I just introduced myself and, like, right away, hey, I got a guy's fighting in 2 weeks and I might be double booked. Would you mind coaching this guy? I'm like, hell yeah.
That's awesome. Dewey's a legend, man. I think a lot of people in MMA probably don't understand the depth of his experience and knowledge.
Unreal.
You know what I mean? Like, they've seen a little bit as of late, and I think they're getting exposed to Dewey a little bit more and starting to see. But that dude is a legit legend in the space.
I mean, if you look at boxing – kickboxing, Muay Thai, MMA, he's over 100 combined fights. I remember sparring with him, and I'm like, you know, unfortunately, he would lower himself to what's he going to get out of beating me up, right? Nothing, you know, but so I could learn.
That's a good sparring partner, though. That's a hell of a sparring partner.
Yeah, no, awesome, you know. It was great, and so I learned a lot from that, and just all that vast experience, you know, and then he spent years and years and years and years with, you know, one kick with Nick Blomgren, and I remember Dewey just telling me a story. Can't remember how many fights he had, and Nick's like, all right, we're just, you're gonna go fight, you know, Duke Rufus, here you go, you know. And then he was the first guy to beat Mighty Mo. Wow. At the, when they had the K1.
Yep.
Mighty Mo was 12 wins, 12 knockouts and no losses, and outweighed Dewey by roughly 100 pounds.
Yeah, he's a big dude.
And Dewey comes back, you know, at the end of the first round, he's just laughing, you know. And I wasn't there for that fight, but I would just ask him, like, Dewey, why were you laughing? He's like, I had to convince myself to get back out there, man. He's like, this dude, it's hard. He goes, just funny. He goes, I caught a punch and the whole left side of my body went numb. And I'm like, all right, here it is.
It's amazing. I tell you, if you got some extra time over the holidays and you're looking for something, I think it's still on there. I know there were some issues with the contract sort of, but I think all that K1 stuff is still on USC Fight Pass, man. So you can find some Dewey Cooper. Dude, if you haven't ever seen old Ray Sefo clips, like, I know there's probably a lot of people that only know Ray Sefo as the dude with the PFL, yep. You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
Bro, you go back and watch Ray Sefo in his prime, that man could fight.
Him and Mark Hunt, just hands down, let's take a punch, let's do this, just here we go.
Those legendary days, man.
Yeah, you know, and just to finish off with Dewey comes back around at 2-3, and he's the first guy to beat Mighty Mo, outweighed by 100 pounds. You know, Dewey's mindset of just, you know, it's – crazy,
like, bro. And if you need somebody to be a cheerleader in your corner, I don't know if there's a better hype man. A lot, even if you don't even want to talk about the technical assistance, you want to just talk about having somebody believe in you and helping you believe in yourself.
Yeah,
it is that guy.
No, 100%. He's got the skill set, the mindset, and he reads his fighters. Each fighter needs something different,
right?
You know, whether
you
know how you coach them is different. He just, so you take all of his experience from fighting and now, you know, the coaches he's been around, and then formulate to his own, you know, form, and, you know, he's working with that the Team Combat League, you know, building that up, which I think is a great concept, and you know, promoting that, and just seeing, you know, with the handful of fighters that he's worked with over the years, and building his own brand. But yeah, if it wasn't for certain individuals, with, you know, Jeff Mayweather inducing me to stitch, teaching me how to wrap hands, to, you know, Dewey opening up the door, which led to this person, led to that, and now, you know, for work with people and show them how to wrap hands, and I'm not going to charge you money or anything like that. I'm just, hey, here, I'll show you my technique. There's multiple ways of doing it, but here's what you need to do to get there. And I'm hopefully going to go down, I think in January, I still got to talk to Raul about doing a seminar down in Tijuana. But we just said, hey, he's like, what do you want? I'm like, I don't want any money. He goes, well, how about if we do this? We'll get the government involved, and we'll have people bring food for charity.
Oh, that's cool.
That's cool.
And I'm like, yeah, cool. Let's do that. Cool. So I'd rather do that. Like, if, you know, coach out here, we could put a seminar. But, hey, let's get some toys for kids or something like that. Bring something else. Because the only way I can ever pay the people back that help me is to, you know, pay forward.
That's so awesome.
And Dewey's got the coolest voice. He's like, I can't even do a good Dewey. He's got, like, the coolest, like, cool coach voice.
He does.
He could have been on, like, 70s talk radio or something, like a 70s late night radio or something.
He's got
the salty jams. Gravelly, but he's got that gravelly sort of, like, yeah. Oh, I can't even do it. It's so unique.
You touched on the Team Combat League. I just want to mention that real quick for anybody that hasn't seen this concept. It's a boxing concept. It's cool because I've actually seen, like, on BoxRec, they're starting to list all the records there and stuff. But essentially, the team comes together and everybody fights one round, right? So it's just like you just go all out for 3 minutes. So you've got all the different weight classes and different people representing. But it's actually a pretty cool concept because instead of being like a team and we'll do like 10 full matches and we'll see what the score is, it's like, hell no, bro. Just go out there and go all out for 3 minutes.
Yeah, it's almost like a wrestling duel but boxing in a sense. You know what you're doing. If you get a knockout or if you get a pin or if you get, you know,
Different
points for your team.
Great comparison, so, like a wrestling duel.
Yeah, it's a very similar concept, you know, weight classes and, you know, and it could come down to, hey, the heavyweight guys got to get this knockout for the team to win and move on. And they have it, you know, formatted as kind of a almost like a football league. You know, okay, hey, these and then points at the end lead to playoffs and then, you know, finals, semifinals, I think. And you have to fight. You don't have – that's the one thing that I don't think people understand. There is no feel-out round.
Right.
There is no, I got to get just my – I got 3 minutes to figure this out, you know, as soon as you get in. And so – the fighters have to just, you know, I haven't talked to anyone that has fought in it yet, but just from what limited experience I have competing, like you have to fight. You literally have to fight. There is no, okay, I'll get him in the second round, or man, I got a little bit wobbled. Maybe I could ease off the gas. No, you got to go.
I love, you know, obviously working with the CFSC Match Day crew with we're doing the wrestling duels, and I've really started to find this new passion for it because it wasn't something I followed closely. Like I was aware of college wrestling, but now like, being involved in it, I've really started to follow it. And I love the dual concept. And I understand that at the end of the day, it's kind of an individual sport. And, you know, ultimately you're working towards March and you're working for the individual titles. But I wish there was some way to do – and I know they have the team points and you name a winner, but it's not like the actual team coming together. I wish there was some way to do – like, I don't know if it's a different tournament or how they would format it exactly, but putting real value in these team duels. We had a situation the other day. It was Campbell in one of their – they had three matches in the same day. But it came down to, like, the heavyweight, the final match. It's like, if he's heavily favored. It's Tay Gaudioli, so he's, like, hugely favored. He's, like, ranked number eight in the country right now. But it was a situation where the way it worked out was, like, if he wins a decision, it's not going to be good enough. Like, they're still going to come up short on the duel, right? If he gets – yeah, he needed a pin. Basically, you know, they were either going to lose, draw, or if he gets a pin, if he can actually get the pin, they can win. And he didn't get the pin, so they came up short. But it added so much to it because it was like number eight in the country versus like a freshman, you know what I mean? But it's not just can you win. It's like can you get this guy pinned? And ultimately, he didn't. He was kind of tired.
Pins are tough.
It's all.
I think people think that they just it's guaranteed, and it's not. Most matches come out by points. They win by points.
Especially because you had gotten to a point where I think the guy was basically just like, you're not going to pin me. You know what I mean? Like, I know I'm not going to win this match, and I have no way of beating you, but I'm not letting you put my shoulders to the ground. Like, there's no way it's happening. But I don't know. It just adds something to it. You know, and then you got the teams obviously up there yelling, and it's cool, man. I wish they could find a way to work that into the NCAA championships, or maybe it's a separate tournament right before the individuals or something. It'd be cool to have like a real true team concept like that.
Yeah. Now, at the end of the NC2As, they do have the team,
right?
You know, the rankings, the team, and how it is. But and then now that you're going back to the Midwest, where I grew up in California, wrestled in California, which is a huge state for wrestling, but the biggest environment I ever witnessed was the state tournament, which was in Stockton, and this arena was packed. But you can imagine going to watch like Iowa and Iowa, you know, Penn State, you know, as they're coming up. I was listening to a podcast with Bo Nickel, and he was talking about how they just started off with whatever, 10,000, then they built another facility and built another, it just kept growing and growing. And to be in that environment is just got to be intense. And then the coaching that goes on, I just started watching, it's called the Duel.
I just started watching that last night.
And you just
– Jim Gibbons is the executive producer. It's on Amazon. I just started watching last night because Jim Gibbons has actually done commentary for us a couple times, including the Missouri show. And Shane Sparks is out there with him. I think they're touring around. And I just to watch – that's funny that you just started watching it.
Getting that coach's perspective, like I would love to just be a fly on the wall where you take coaches from all different levels and just – how they get into people's mind, like the intensity of a Dan Gable, a Terry, Tom Brands, you know, to – you look at all these different – John Smith with, you know, at Oklahoma. Guerrero actually – I think he's an assistant coach there still. Maybe to go – I'm not sure where he's at, but he was 2 years behind me, but in California, I think he went to Independence High School, and he would come in middle school to practice with the high schoolers and just watching how elite level this guy was and to go through. And I got a huge appreciation for what the, you know, the sacrifices, but, you know, watching Gable break down, hey, this is where I was a little maybe complacent, you know, different things. And be just, you look at Belichick and coaching football, you know, to John Woods for UCLA basketball coach. Like, what do these guys do? Like, to convince these alpha personalities and
get them, you know, to like buy in and get them on the same page.
And then, like you're saying, like a fighter like Dewey, you know, instilling the confidence in yourself and helping you believe in yourself. And you look at like Eric Nixick, you know, he's another one. I started wrapping hands and he started coaching at the same time we met. He was a bartender over at Three Angry Wives. I may or may not have had a few drinks over there. And
maybe.
Yeah.
One or two.
Yeah, one or two or 2,000.
Two or 10,000.
But yeah, where he just, you know, started out. I think one of the funniest, I can't remember who, was it when Francis? God, I can't remember. But anyway, it was like Dewey and Eric there, and he goes, hey, not bad for a bouncer and a bartender, you know, for coaching these guys.
Right?
Because that's what, you know, Dewey worked in that.
It's, I mean, I know we all hold Eric in high regard, man, but he deserves it, man. He's put, it's funny to you to mention that, you know, the rise from bartender, you know what I mean, to where he is now. And it's, again, it's a rise that I don't think, you know, a lot of people, newer fans of the sport, might be just like, oh, this Johnny-come-lately guy that, you know, he's just, he's right. Because obviously, man, they're at the top. I mean, Extreme Couture at the top of the game right now. He personally, I think people see him as one of the absolute best in the game right now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those, like, you know, 15-year overnight sensations or whatever, right? You know what I mean? Where it's like, he's at the top of the game, but he didn't start at the top of the game. Like, he just put in that equity and just put in that effort. And as you said, I mean, from the humblest beginnings and grinded and grinded. And now he's at the top and deservedly so. And a lot of it, I think, is not even – I mean, he's a phenomenal tactician in terms of X's and O's, but, like, I don't even believe that's really the key to the success. You know what I mean? Like, you talk about that coach mentality and that leadership mentality and getting people in the right mindset and understanding that – and you touched on it too. That's one of the things I think is such a mark of a good coach is – when they provide something different to every athlete. You know what I mean? When it's
right.
When it's somebody, it's like, hey, this is my system. You need to learn my system because this is what we do and this is how we do it here. It's like, that just – I mean, not to say that there aren't some basics that you're like, no, listen, these will help everybody. But I think it's so important that every athlete is getting individualized instruction, especially psychologically and mentally.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just everybody's so different.
He knows what to say to bring out the best from his
athletes. Who
needs
to be yelled at? Who needs to be consoled?
Exactly.
Who needs to be told they won the round, even though they clearly didn't? Who needs to be told they probably lost the round, even though they clearly won, because that's how their motivation works. I mean, those are just things that only come with experience and understanding of leadership, and I think he's so good.
And lots of times on the mats and in the cage with them. I mean, like, he's got to be at Extreme Couture, like, every day, and he's always working there. He's got the pro practice, and then there's other days I've been there for other stuff, and he's always in there. I think these fighters understand that he's not just trying to be, like, this figurehead that's, like, trying to get the fame. Like, you feel like there's some coaches out there that might as well want to be like celebrity coaches. You know, they want the fame, they want to do whatever, you know.
Extreme Couture got torn apart because coaches were arguing over like who got to be on Countdown.
Yeah, that's crazy.
You know what I mean? Like,
that's crazy.
People would get mad because somebody else got featured. I mean, that ripped that gym apart.
Yeah. And now it's like it's a very cohesive group. But, I mean, I think fighters realize that, you know, he's out there for their best interests. And he knows what to say to them. And these are guys that he's seen them at their lowest of lows, you know, during the practice camp. And he's seen them at their best. And he has that way to just sort of tap in. And I think a lot of fighters, they know he's going to say the right things. But they also, they don't want to let themselves down. They don't want to let their fighters down. And at the end of the day, they don't want to let the coach down that's put all that time and effort. And he's able to bring out great things. And he has a great rapport. And you look at any of their practices. You see videos. A lot of the fighters do it. And as much and as sweaty and as hurt as those guys are, they all have smiles on their faces. And that says something about a gym. That says something about the coach. It says something about the environment. And it says something about your training partners. And I think we're seeing that. Extreme Couture right now. It's weird because, like, them and Syndicate for a while were kind of battling as, like, who was going to be the top dog in town. And Extreme right now has clearly just shown itself here in Vegas to be the top gym and one of the top gyms easily in the United States.
Yep.
And Eric's a big part of that, for sure.
It's awesome, man. Do you still work any boxing at all? I know you still follow the sport.
I haven't worked boxing in a while, so I between my full-time job as a fireman, and I got to make one correction, I do work for the Clark County Fire Department.
Sir, so, yes,
it's
sir.
All right. It's okay.
People rep about that shit, man, because it's either county, you're either Vegas, you're county, or you're like Summerlin, you're Henderson.
Yes,
like,
I work for legit. Yeah, Clark County. And, it's only reason I say that,
is that
sometimes.
Better than Vegas?
No, it's all the same job. Well, in the grand scheme of things, we all have the same job.
He's like, the only reason I want to clarify is because we're much superior in our skills.
I just know friends
are
listening to this.
Our ladders are much better.
Give me a hard time. Because, ironically, the public doesn't know the difference. You know, just, hey, call this fireman.
What is the difference? So Las Vegas?
So Clark County is whatever unincorporated means. Like, the entire Las Vegas Strip is unincorporated. So we're in this area right here. Doing this podcast, we're quote unquote unincorporated.
That is such a weird thing, right?
Yeah, like I need to Clark County.
Las Vegas Strip is
here.
Unincorporated. Yeah. Yeah.
So even my old house by the Palace Station, that was all like Clark County area and stuff like that. Clark County carries the bulk, I would say, of most.
Isn't that the weird thing? Like the mayor of Las Vegas technically has no power over anything on the Strip.
With good reason.
where is it? It's Las Vegas Boulevard, kind of north of Sahara. So the north side of Sahara is like that's the city's jurisdiction.
And that only goes so far because then at some point you get out to North Las Vegas.
Right. Then you get out to North Las Vegas, and then there's little pockets in here and there and all that. All right.
So Clark County, anything unincorporated, which includes the Las Vegas Strip.
Which includes the Las Vegas Strip. Yeah. Laughlin. Then you've got your rural areas of like
Laughlin?
Sandy.
You're in charge of Laughlin?
Yeah. Clark County has Laughlin
as
well.
An hour away.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Clark County's huge.
I was just thinking, it's weird because there's Las Vegas. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. So there's Las Vegas, there's the city fire department, then there's Clark County. But all of Las Vegas resides within Clark County.
Correct.
And which is so weird. Clark County's huge.
How government generates money is probably what it comes down to. It's above my pay grade. I walk into burning
which
buildings.
Which is just so crazy because you say unincorporated, really but it's like the whole damn city is in Clark County.
Yeah, and then it's the unincorporated and the incorporated. Then you have the city of North Las Vegas and Henderson and – anyway, so back to your question.
So say I call 911. How does it get to you, or does it go to like?
So it goes to, we have a dispatch center that actually dispatches Las Vegas City, North Las Vegas, Clark County Fire Department.
So it's on them to figure out where it is.
So they know where it is, and based off of when the call comes in, it's on their CAD. It tells what jurisdiction's going, and then the computer picks the closest unit.
Closest unit.
And then we have what they call automatic aid agreements. So
I was going to ask,
so
if they're busy, yeah.
So if nobody's
you can help
nearby.
And if we're closer. I worked at Station 14 for almost 19 years on Desert Inn in Eastern, and literally Sahara and Eastern on the north side of Sahara is technically Las Vegas City. Well, their closest station is on Charleston and, like, 15th Street.
Right.
Well, we're half a mile away.
There's
so we just,
burning,
whoever's calling,
right there,
medical calls. So everybody helps each other out. That's cool. Run into their jurisdiction. They run into our jurisdiction. We train constantly together. We have what they call a Southern Nevada SNOFU. It's some giant thing they put together where, hey, these are the standard operating procedures we're going to do. Like if there is a major event on the Strip, a high-rise fire, even, you know, like the UNLV unfortunate school shooting and things like that.
I was going to say, I'm sure October 1 was a big one as well.
Yeah, big one. That taught a lot of lessons and kind of – you're constantly learning. So we have kind of a playbook, for lack of better terms. They do things a little bit different, but we have a standardized, okay, when these events happen, this is what we're going to do. So the dispatchers, they're the ones that kind of handle the nuts and bolts. I'm just a knucklehead that just, and the tones go off, you hop in the rig and you just go.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Where are we going? Get over here. So, long-winded question back to boxing.
No boxing.
Now I haven't spent time in the gyms, you know, and I feel bad at times too. A friend of mine, Nate, haven't seen him for a while, and he's like, hey man, can you come to the gym? I got this, you know, up and coming fighter. And actually, like, one of them that I just, timing wasn't right for me or timing there, it was like Devin Haney. He's like, hey, I need you to come in. This kid's going to be up and coming, and the schedules didn't work out. And it's hard, you know, because I have that full time job. The UFC keeps me busy 2 or 3 weekends. And so to actually get into the gyms and build that rapport, I started off doing boxing with the coaches and stuff. And like, it is, I could walk into a gym and some people might know who I am. Some people not, you know, like Rudy Hernandez, he's been around the sport since he was a kid, you know, with his brother. Don House has been around, start off in boxing. House has been around boxing since the 70s.
And, crazy.
You know, Rob and Roe, you look at, you know, the people that are fighting in the UFC right now, he used to coach some of their dads or work corners with some of their dads, you know, when they were fighting.
That's crazy.
Especially in Hawaii. You know, so those guys have that, like, super, super deep-rooted, you know, I guess, intimate knowledge or with the, you know, the fight game, the fight business, you know, who they're around, and just, you know, people refer. So I haven't done boxing in quite a while.
I don't know when you'd fit it in. What did you make of Deontay Wilder? That was, I mean, I know you still follow the sport very much, even though you don't work. I know you're still a big boxing fan at heart. Yeah. What'd you make of it? Because I feel like, man, you know, I always say, like, look, I don't follow every fight. I just don't, you know, you talk about how busy you are. Same thing. Mixed martial arts takes up my life, and because, you know, I'm following every organization out there, and, you know, working with CFSC and all that. So, like, I just, my available space for boxing is small, but at the highest level, I mean, it's still such a beautiful art, and it's still fun to see it executed at the highest level. And Deontay Wilder, of course, there's been this crazy discussion. You know, maybe he might be one of the rarities that would try to slip over and do a little MMA and maybe take on Francis Ngannou in an MMA fight. But, man, I feel like maybe the wind got taken out of those sails, and now they're talking about does the kid even carry on? And so I'm curious kind of what you thought of the performance, what you think of the future, because I know, man, before we started recording, you were sharing a pretty beautiful story about what a guy he is.
Yeah, so start off with Deontay. Like, I've only met him a couple times because Don House coaches him, works kind of as an assistant and plays different roles as a cut man and et cetera. But just what a good dude. Like, when you sit down and talk to him, people get caught up a lot of times seeing – how people act during press conferences or what they say and do this, you know, and some of it might be who they truly are and this, and some of it's for promoting a fight. But Deontay just spends the time, and a very close friend of mine, her son's, you know, getting into boxing, and I want to, hey, let's give him the nuts and bolts about the reality of the sport, the importance of, you know, being, you know, dedicated in this. And Deontay showed up at the track, and there's a handful of coaches, you know, they're working with their kids at the track, kids, and he took the time to talk to all the kids, and then just as a favor to me, and spent time talking to this young man. And I turned 50 in a few months, and I'm like, man, I got to get the notebook out and start taking notes, you know, just well-spoken. And I think he's, you know, taken lessons and experience in his life and different things that he's applied and how people are. And, you know, he even brought up, you know, his close friend Terrence Crawford, who he said was in 31 different foster homes.
Wow.
And look at where he's at. When he gives back, he goes, so imagine, you know.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, how his upcoming, crazy, you know, comes through and things like that. Now, as far as the fight goes, did I see him get hurt at any point? No. You know, did he take some shots? 100% he did. But I just wonder, obviously I'm not in the ring. I don't know what he's feeling, what he's thinking. He just didn't seem like, hey, that urgency was there.
Yeah.
There was, you know, and we all have bad days, you know, and unfortunately,
it's true.
His is in front of millions of people, and you only get one chance at it.
I mean, well, there's kind of a parallel, right, with Colby Covington, right? I mean, obviously two different characters, but as far as just the performance, right, like that fight, was it just he had a really bad night? Because I've heard a lot of people say, hey, I don't even want to see, like, I don't ever want to see Colby fight again, where other people say, hey, man, you know, now he's coming out saying he had a broken foot. If he did have
If he did have a broken foot in the first 30 seconds,
that would explain a lot. But it's interesting, right? Because one night, like you said, maybe it was just a bad night. But one night, I see a lot of people that are like, he's done. He doesn't have it anymore.
That people do, it's easy to write people off in all sports, you know, people, oh, they're done, you know, and without actually sitting down and talking to him. But again, his post-fight interview, he didn't have any excuses, just, you know, he won this. The man loves his kids, even when we were at the track, just talking about the greatest gift, of, you know, is being a dad. I can't speak for that because I don't have any kids, but, and even after the fight, he's like, hey, I can't wait to get back and see my kids. But I didn't see him get hurt. The guy's beyond tough. I mean, seeing him with fighting off of, like, incredible heart when him and Fury, and just, you know, some of these fights that he's had. And so, you know, and the one thing about the if I have a bad day and I miss an IV, okay, maybe it could be life-changing for somebody. But in a fight game, if you have a bad day, not only could be career-ending, it could be life-ending, it could be life-changing in so many different dynamics. And I think that's what, you know, people don't realize. You're one punch away from game over.
Yeah,
you know,
it's wild, right? Because on the one hand, you don't want to focus too much on that because you want, you know, sport, we want to have fun and we want to enjoy it. But I just, and it's something that sometimes I feel like I'm preaching it when maybe I shouldn't, or maybe people don't want to hear it. But I just think it's so important to remember that, like, when we sit here and we evaluate these athletes and we talk about their performances and, like, dude, when you say you're putting your health and safety on the line, granted, every athlete is putting their health and safety on the line. You know, you can go out there and snap a leg in a soccer game or whatever, and you can never walk right again or whatever. But, man, you really are in this situation, man. In this business, in the fight business, what you were putting on the line is – I feel bad when that guy sucks. That dude should never do this again. Yeah. That blah, blah, blah. Like, bro, do you understand, like, what it takes to get in there and, like, what they're doing each and every time? And the mental play that it has on, especially now, because, like, we're not in a position anymore where people can just play it off like they didn't know. Like, I didn't know what the risks were. I just got in there and I fought. Like, everybody knows now what the risks are, and everybody knows what they're putting on the line. And I don't know. I'm just glad you said that, because I feel like sometimes that gets lost. And I know it's kind of good to lose that thought, because we want to enjoy this, and sometimes we don't want that weighing on us. But, man, when you start criticizing guys and girls in there, like, don't forget what they're putting on the line.
You know, if you look at everything in life, like, we all have an expiration date on what we do. You know, at a certain age, I won't be able to be a fireman anymore. I won't be able to do this. You know, yeah. Pro football player. Like, we all have an expiration date, and it comes. We just don't know necessarily when that's going to be. But then you've seen people that people have counted out, and they make this incredible turn. I mean, look at Charles Oliveira, you know, and then just from this to the rise to the top, you see people down in all sports. They're just down, and then, boom, something clicks again. And they're just like, man, they found the fountain youth, or maybe it's a different coaching set, or, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
But we all have our expiration date.
Everybody loves a good comeback story.
100%.
Everybody loves a good comeback story. What do you think? I mean, okay, flat performance. Granted, a lot of people probably didn't watch it, right? It wasn't like a huge event. It was off prime, all that sort of thing. I mean,
he's still a big name.
Well, I was going to say, if PFL comes out and says, oh, by the way,
we'll give you a fight.
We're doing Ngannou Wilder as our main event of our pay-per-view or whatever. Like, I mean, those two dudes get in. Nobody's going to be like, not interested.
I mean, I'd feel like we'd almost watch a murder happen. I mean, that'd be kind of iffy. But, I mean, he's still a name draw. I mean, he's
boxing
he's
or still, if that was a fight, would you want to see a boxing match, or would you want to see an MMA fight?
I like either one. I mean, there's the part of me that would like to see a guy that has been actively saying and teasing wanting to go in an MMA fight get a chance to do it,
yeah.
You know, live up to what you've been saying. You know, he's still a hell of an athlete,
yep.
And he's still got great power. And if he catches somebody that thinks that he doesn't have anything for him, it's going to be interesting to see, because if he went in there and just knocked out an MMA fighter – that wants to try to stand and strike with a world-class boxer.
Yep.
That'd be kind of fun to watch that. But there's always the anticipation of, okay, when's the guy going to go for a takedown? How's his takedown defense going to work? How's all this other stuff going to work? So that part of an MMA fight sounds great, but I wouldn't mind watching him fight boxing again too. I mean, he's just such a character. He's a big, big personality. And then when you hear the side of him that he's actually has a big heart behind it. That's very, very cool.
Because he's a big star, man. He could have rolled in there and just been like, I shook a hand and I walked off. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I like hearing the fact that he's been smart about it. You know, he's been taking care of his money. He's providing for people, but he's smart, because, you know, I think for so long you always hear about these boxers that used to just they were making money hand over fist, but they were getting rid of it hand over fist just as quickly. So it's kind of nice to hear that he's taken the time to do it. But, I mean, we've seen this with MMA fighters as well. Like, hate to be the one that's always like, oh, you need to retire. You know, I hate being that one to always call that. You know, you like the fighter to be able to go out on their own. But that being said, there is a point where sometimes you have to save a fighter from themselves because they're too tough to like actually stop. You know, somebody has to be the voice of reason. Like, bro, you're not just performing at the same level. While he might not still be performing at the same level when he was at his best, he's still performing at a high enough level that he could still put on good fights. I think it didn't help going into this particular event, this big fight that they've been holding over his head in a character with a carrot like Anthony Joshua, then have him up on the same dais, and then they're talking back and forth.
So weird.
And whereas so Joshua weird. Didn't he wasn't really from – granted, I only saw bits of it – the presser wasn't really playing into it. He stayed focused. But then Deontay was answering some of the stuff, you know, was actually talking a little bit. And then you had Hurd up there kind of going in. There were a lot of things happening in that fight week to kind of bring him out of what he should have been focused and maybe was focused on. But that being said, I'd be more than happy to watch him. I don't think he's a washed-up boxer. I don't think he, by any means, needs to step away. I'd still like to watch him, you know, fight for sure. But would I like to watch him fight and make sure?
I think it would
be cool with the right, especially with the right fighter, like Clarissa Shields. Hell of a boxer, and they played her right.
Yeah.
They gave her the right matchups to do it. So it just depends. I mean, if there's a promoter out there that wants to throw my mad money of cash and just only wants to throw mad money of cash and get one fight out of them, I can see where they don't put the best fight for him. But if there's somebody that's like, hey, I can use his star power and his name, and let's make some money off this, then you play it right.
It's funny. I was just surprised to see how many people I saw that were like, he needs to be done. Because now, was this a fun fight? It was not a fun fight.
Yeah.
But is he normally a fun fighter?
Yes.
Absolutely. 100%. So I feel like at least give him one more. Yeah. Now, if he goes out and has that same performance a second time, then maybe you go, okay, now you're not even fun. You know what I mean? So what
then
are we doing
here? Then
maybe
it's time to transition or do something else.
Do you still want to do this or
you
whatever?
Go bare knuckle?
Yeah.
Imagine his power in bare knuckle. Holy shit.
Oh, unbelievable.
Like Ben Rothwell and him, like stepping in
there
or something.
Oh, don't you do that to my man, Ben Rothwell.
I know. I love Ben. And that's what I'm saying. I mean, like, the dude, I mean, he's
always.
Ben
will take that fight, though. 100%. Ben Rothwell will take that fight, 100%.
I mean, he's got power, and he's always going to have that it factor where I think somebody's going to watch it and always know that it can be over in any one moment. Like, that part of his game hasn't went away, you know. So
now the power's there.
The power's there. I mean, and he's still got a hell of a draw. I mean, people like watching the guy. So, I mean, yeah, if the guy wants to keep boxing, I'm all for it. But, man, if he wants to go MMA, I am really into it as well.
It's one thing, too. You wonder – so Deontay hasn't fought. You know, I mean, he had a fight, but only lasted, you know, less than a minute, you know. Both Joshua and Parker fought on the Francis undercard.
Yeah, they've been recently
fighting.
And
both of their fights didn't last long at all.
Right.
So they're, you know, recently active. They're already in peak shape. They threw this together. I'm speculating. I can't speak for the promotion, but if you look at – they already had Usyk and Fury lined up for
that.
That's right.
Yep. Then it scrambled.
December 23rd.
You're so right.
They was all put together, everything else. So then now last minute because they put this together.
Great point.
And Deontay, he's a fighter. Yeah, I can take this opportunity. Did he have?
It's a great point.
I can't speak for his training camp. What was he doing before?
Like
what was this?
And we know the type of money they're throwing out there.
And that's
right?
It. I guarantee this was almost generational type money, where it's like even if he wasn't well off, I'm sure he was well off just from taking this.
Boy, that's
one
a great point.
Fight.
Yeah. So you got to remember both those guys have been active, and there's always been that talk, you know. And the one thing that I always find intriguing about boxing sometimes is, like, you see people like, oh, we're going to have – you look at Manny Pacquiao and Floyd. How long did it take for that to finally happen?
Years.
You know, you're like, holy cow.
They're always orbiting around each other but always still in contact.
Years and years. And then, all right, do I take this fight, which is, you know, less reward, higher risk? Or do I sit around and do I wait? Do I do this? You know, the dynamics of the business and the dynamics of everything is just, there's more than what you and I see.
Yeah.
You know, and the casual fan or even the hardcore fan sees. So there's just so many variables and factors. We can't just throw everything in and say, okay, you know what? He's done.
Great point. All right, listen, the UFC still has another week of hiatus before we get back to action. But there is some stuff to look out for this week. First of all, I'll just throw it out there. Ryzen 45, December 30th. It's on. It would start late.
Is it Ryzen or Risen?
Ryzen. It's definitely Ryzen.
I always call it Risen.
Risen?
It's
Ryzen. It's definitely Ryzen.
No, let's call it Risen.
It starts late Saturday
night.
It
has risen up.
Maybe I'm wrong. Now you got me thinking. I thought it was Ryzen. Is
I
it Risen?
I've heard people say Risen before, but maybe it is Ryzen. Okay. I think I've heard both.
I thought I was confident that it was Ryzen.
All right, maybe it
now
is.
Now you got me second guessing that it's Risen.
Then my job is done.
You've got
no,
me
Ryzen
second guessing. What is it, the Bernstein Bears or whatever? Yeah. Like, you got me doing that. Like,
is it Bernstein or Bernstein?
Was there a Shazam or was there not? Like, you got me second. The Mandela effect. You got me. You screwed me up there. But it starts late Saturday night. It's actually New Year's Eve in Japan. But because of the time difference, late Saturday night here is for the start. It's going to be a long one, by the way. 17 fights.
Wow.
Two intermissions. An opening ceremony after the first four fights. So, I mean, this is one of those long, drawn-out, all-day affairs. So I will probably be catching bits and pieces of it along the way. But two very, very incredible fights Kyoji Horiguchi in the main event against Makoto Shinryu, flyweight title. He was the kid that came through CFFC. Now he's fighting Kyoji Horiguchi. That is an amazing flyweight bout there. And then Juan Archuleta is in business against Kai Asakura for the bantamweight title as well. So that'll be a big fight there. You got John Dotson on the card as well. You got Vince Morales. You're going to have the pageantry of Japan. So starts late on the 30th, rolls into New Year's Eve as well. So put that on your calendar. It's on Fight TV, as I was kind of joking earlier. That's changed now. It's Triller TV. $19.99, I think, is the price. So not expensive. Like I said, it's going to be a long day, and the hours are going to be a little bit weird. So that's definitely worth checking out. But I will put on your radar as well, because I will be there on Saturday night in Philadelphia. Fury Professional Grappling 8. Good card. This is the end of year card, so we get to have some UFC talent on there. Main event, Aljamain Sterling versus Kevin Dantzler. I'll tell more about that in a second, but I'm going to read off some of these other names as well. Co-main event, Alexander Romanov versus Chris Daukaus. Romanov, I should say. Nico Price versus Patrick Sabatini in there as well. Kyle Daukaus versus Eric Anders, which they fought in MMA. Now they're grappling as well. Charlie Campbell is there. Fatima Klein, who looks amazing and is probably destined for the UFC. She'll be there. Some familiar names to CFFC fans. Ian Alston, Paul Capaldo, Santa Curatolo, all in business on the main card. So it should be a fun night. CM Punk is busy, if you may have seen. He's back to action. He did Madison Square Garden last night. I think on the 30th, he's doing the Forum in L.A. But my color commentator will be Erin Blanchfield, which I'm pretty excited about, right? Like, she's the timing's phenomenal. A, she's phenomenally talented, but she just got her fight announced. Manon Fiorot, March 30th in Atlantic City. Number 2, Erin Blanchfield versus number 3, Manon Fiorot, which has to be the number 1 contender fight. To face the winner of Alexa Grasso versus Valentina Shevchenko. So, man, pretty cool timing for her. And then she'll jump in and call these fights. That should be a lot of fun. But I want to talk about this because this is interesting. We won't go too deep into it, but I'm kind of curious to get your thoughts on this, right? Because Aljamain Sterling, we know Aljamain Sterling, of course. Kevin Dantzler. Kevin Dantzler is 5-0 under the Fury grappling banner. He's undefeated. He has 2 submissions, 3 decisions. But Kevin Dantzler is a guy that basically the way he approaches grappling is he touches hands and he sits down and he's like, come engage me here. I'm working for my butt. That's the way we're going to do it. Him and Merab Dvalishvili, Aljamain Sterling's friend and teammate, had a very spirited exchange back and forth. Merab was pissed because he wouldn't stand up and wanted to engage on the feet. They had some great exchanges. Ultimately, Dantzler took home the decision win. Now, Aljamain has come out and said, look, if that dude sits down and pulls guard on me, I'm literally going to grab his ankle and I'm going to pull him across the mat. I'm just going to drag him around the place. I'm going to embarrass him until he gets up like a man. Meanwhile, Kevin Dantzler says, look, this is sport jujitsu. I'm a guard player. He's like, why do you want me to engage you in a takedown? He's like, if you want to take me down, it's because you want top position, right? I'm willing to give you top position. I'm telling you, you can have top position. You just need to come engage my guard. Meanwhile, Aljamain says what I think a lot of people do, and listen, I understand this logic because I have this logic as well, that you would never sit down on the street in a street fight, you know what I mean? And this is martial arts, and you know it did come from combat to some degree, and you would never, ever, ever sit down like that if this was an actual conflict, to which Kevin says, yeah, but it's not an actual conflict. So it's not bad blood. You know, they both say, look, I don't hate the guy. It's not a grudge match. But they both have very dynamic theories or differing theories about how grappling should take place. And I understand both of them. I guess I probably favor Aljamain's logic because I have always not been the biggest fan of like sport jujitsu where they sit down and pull guard immediately. I'm like that because I kind of agree with what he's saying. If it was martial arts and this was a battlefield, you're not going to sit down. But Kevin Dantzler, I can't argue when I say that to him. He's like, yeah, but it's not a battlefield. It's sport jujitsu, and this is my game. And again, the only reason you want me to engage you on the feet is because you want to take me down. Bro, I'm already down. I don't care. Come take top position. So, I don't know. Kind of curious what you guys think about the matchup and what you guys think about this logic, because I'm intrigued by this, man. I'm intrigued.
And I guess if you know the rules of the game and they allow that, how can you hate, right?
Right?
So, if you can just literally go down and pull guard – and sit there and wait, and you're not called. Are you going to get called for stalling? I mean, what if two dudes just sit there and I stand?
Yeah,
and
you do. So you do have to move aggressive. So he's one of these guys that will like sit down, but he will like scoot at you. Like he'll come at you. You know what I mean? So like he never gets called for stalling. He does, and it's lightning quick. Like this second,
it's so ridiculous how some of those guys are so good at scooting on their butts.
And dude, and the second you touch him, I mean, the second you touch him, like his inversions and his rolls, like they're so fast. Like, you know, like I know, and it's funny because a big part of me, I'll be honest, really does want to see Aljo just grab him and drag him because I think it would be hilarious. But I also think, you know, excuse me, knowing Dantzler, he's going to be like, all right, cool, you grab my ankle. As soon as you grab my ankle, I'm now grabbing your wrist, and I'm immediately inverting, and I'm going. Like, Merab dove forward on him in their matchup and nearly got caught in an armbar, and it was, like, instantaneous. He's like, I'm diving past the guard, and he dove past it, and as soon as he did, boom, turn, almost got caught in an armbar, you know? So, I don't know. It's interesting.
Those dudes drill that stuff nonstop. It's like I think they guarantee they have somebody like, all right, when I make this move, come at me with a different way. And, like, there's no winning against these guys. Like, these guys, it's one thing when they have, like, these MMA fights, when it's two MMA guys, then you know that, you know, there's a potential of strikes and kicks. But, man, when you go up against, like, a really good grappler, I feel so bad. But I like seeing the matchups, and always cool when they beat, like, a very, very well-known MMA guy. I'm glad anytime MMA fighters are able to kind of go and do something different because they always are very, very excited about it. I've never heard an MMA fighter that didn't have a fight take, like, a grappling match and say, like, oh, I really wish I didn't do that. Except for, like, maybe Cub when he got injured. But that was not the best. That was not the best situation. But, I mean, it's cool. I mean, I'd be interested to see. I mean, I do like how some of these grappling matches, and I like the fact that we're seeing more and more stuff because it is another avenue where fighters are getting some pay. Granted, it's not like matching their UFC pay, but they are getting paid to do this. And every one of them seems to have just enjoys it.
Yeah.
You know,
because they love to compete.
Them,
they love to compete.
It keeps them competing. But the and they're nerves, doing something different.
The nerves
and they're not
are so
taking,
different.
Well, is this combat? Can
no,
they
no,
slap?
Nope, nope.
Okay,
just
okay. So
up
then it's like,
submission
that's
grappling.
Awesome. It's just straight submission. Some of that combat, some submission grappling shit is fucking gnarly.
Oh, yeah, when they take
like,
the
like, when they
have
heavy
slaps.
Open hand slaps that are straight, that are legit like palm strikes, they're hard as balls. I'm like, holy shit, I'd get so pissed.
These are honestly some of my favorite weeks of the year because we get out there and it's all these familiar faces, but it's these guys that we normally only see on fight week of an MMA fight.
Yep.
Where look, the nerves are there, right? Like you could get knocked out. You could get separated from consciousness. Those things
Aljo
we talked
could
about
hurt
your
himself.
Health. Yeah.
I mean, like there is risk. Aljo actually has a fight not too long, you know, from now, you know, a big fight.
UFC 300.
Yeah, it's a big fight, you know, so there's definitely things that, you know, I'm glad that they're competing. I'm glad they're staying at a good level. They do have to have weight. There's weight limits, so they're keeping themselves in that path.
You know what the weight
you know?
Is here, by the way? 160.
Holy cow.
But dude, I talked to Aljo yesterday, and he's like, you know, this is nice because I don't have to cut. And he's like, as much.
Yeah,
so as much.
I mean, do you think you ever – well, granted, as he gets older, maybe it's not a big thing. But, like, do you think Aljo would ever do welterweight?
Holy cow. I mean, he's doing 45, thank God.
Yeah.
I mean, he could
but just thinking, he's cutting.
Could he do
he's
welter?
Cutting
he walks
for 60.
Over welterweight.
I know, that's what I'm saying. Like, he walks over. And I wonder if
those
at some point
monsters,
where –
those are monsters, though.
But those
are
big,
monsters.
Crazy cuts. And that's why I wonder. I think he's as fit and crazy jacked as he is. I think he's undersized. But at some point, you know he's walking around heavier than a welterweight. But he has power and he has good skill and he has great cardio. And I wonder how he would do, but –
I don't think he'd be undersized at lightweight.
Not at lightweight, but I meant just like if he ever did welterweight. Just, you said 160, made
bro,
me think
like, oh, dude, like, you look like.
But as he gets bigger, as he gets older, I just wonder. I wonder if he'll call it a day before he has to kind of go up where he's like, I just can't make weight.
I mean, see him at 45. He said he was very excited.
45 sounds like a great weight for him. Yeah, I bet he would do well at lightweight as well.
He's excited for that. So
you know, he's not a small dude.
You know, if you're going to take that match, you know this is what this person is going to do. All right. Maybe you're going to be the guy that solves that mystery. Like, if you look at highest level Olympic wrestling, Jordan Burroughs.
Yeah.
He's going to do a double leg. He is going to do a double leg. It's coming, and there's nothing people can do about it.
Yep.
Yeah.
If you look at the greatest majority of his wrestling matches in his career, double leg, double leg, double leg, double leg.
That's it.
And he'll just do grind. You're sprawling. You're doing it. And he just finds a way to get that double.
So good. He's such a
He's
incredible
so
athlete.
Sick, dude. Yeah. I remember for years we've been like, when are you coming at me? He's like, why? Why do I need to?
Yep.
I still feel like he teases every once in a while, but that dude is legit. He is
so good.
He's a beast.
I said it before, but since we're talking about it, I just said when I covered the world championships here in 2017 where he was there, I walked away saying I think that's the greatest athlete I've ever seen in my life, dude. Like,
he's unreal, man.
Unbelievable. Just the speed, the quickness, unreal. The durability, like – It's been so fun this season. We still got two more dates left. January 7th and February 2nd, I believe, of CFFC match day. So if you haven't checked it out, please do, man, because there's some fun events, and it really has become a new passion of mine, man. I love watching it. I'll be anxious for the NCAAs. I'm anxious because there's a whole bunch of guys that, you know, wrestled for us this year under our banner that we'll be seeing going on at the NCAA championship. So I'm looking forward to watching that this year. I might even go out there.
Well, it's funny you brought up that, because around the time that 2017, Kyle Snyder was still killing stuff. So you want to talk about another dude that was like the absolute, the best of the best. I think there was an event that we did. I think it was here in town. I can't remember if Snyder and Burroughs were both on it. And I remember just thinking, like, greatness is in the building.
Yeah,
those dudes are fucking beasts, man.
Very cool.
Those guys that can really fucking wrestle, and, like, they wrestle guys that look so much bigger than them, and they just are able to sort of manhandle them. It's just so fascinating. It's so fascinating watching it. Just like you said, you know it's coming, but there's nothing you can do.
There's nothing you can do about it. This is coming. The double leg is coming.
Well, you know what else is coming? It's 2024. It's a brand new year coming up. Hopefully everybody's enjoying the holidays. I want to thank everybody that always takes the time to check this out and listen to us. And I want to thank everybody, especially over at patreon.com/the MMA Roadshow. Stepping their game up to the next level by helping support the show financially. As little as $3 a month will get you exclusive access to our and a half episodes, and hopefully much more in this coming year, because yeah, we want to dedicate some time over there because, you know what, we've had a lot of...
a new studio set up.
Bro.
We're about to do some shit.
I'm afraid to tell people what you got going on over there, man. You got a
As long as they don't give them my address.
Yeah. They definitely don't get it. If you make your way to the Palatial, Casa de Cogavi, this man is stepping his game up, man. This is like top-tier studio stuff
I'm looking forward. Just going to play around. Do some more interview stuff, obviously the MMA stuff, but also just stuff that's outside of it that I don't normally get to do. I mean, there's a lot of stuff I like to do with, like, veterans and other sort of shit. I was thinking about, well, maybe I could do some interviews that cover some of the stuff outside of just the fight game. You know, I have gear, might as well use it, and then maybe use it to be a voice for more other platforms and other sort of stuff. So it could be interesting. And maybe the Roadshow isn't the perfect spot where some of that goes, but I hope to have more of that on, like, Twitter and some of the social stuff, and maybe come up with other little stuff. So we'll see. But yeah, I had gear. I was like, why don't I put this? That's what happens when there's no UFC. And I'm sitting at the house. I was like, why don't I just redesign the studio
a little
bit?
This dude's like moving stuff around, breaking out gear he hasn't used in years,
just
and
sitting,
repurposing
just sitting
stuff.
There. I was like, why not? Let's just see what happens here. So yeah. So and I'm sure Patreon will be a good aspect where a lot of that stuff can
people want
go
some
to.
Rental studio space over here. They come over here.
By the way, I'll be cooking next to you over here in the kitchen, but. We'll see. We'll see.
Shout out to
Darren Layton.
Yep.
Happy birthday.
Talking about Patreon.
Yeah, he's a longtime listener of the show. I happen to see on Facebook. I wish Patreon would do a better job of telling me when birthdays are there. I tried to go through today and it didn't. So I happened to find out that it was Darren's birthday from Facebook. So maybe there's a way that they can get better. Maybe I don't know if everybody has listed their birthdays in there and it'll show. And maybe I'll just get better and make a calendar or something. But that should be something maybe next year if we get a chance to do more like birthday shout outs and more thank yous and stuff. So
appreciate the support.
Appreciate
you stopping by.
Thanks for having me.
I twist your arm too much to grab a frosty beverage.
I almost forgot. Like and another reason why the Apex is great. And speaking of Mike, you have a pretty good chance to run into him in the restroom. Like I have multiple occasions. There's only one bathroom. One motherfucking bathroom.
I have thought about that. That is a little bit weird. Like as a fan, like you're just gonna run into like now. I let him cut me in line
one time. I was like, bro, you got a quick.
I've done that before too. Yeah, with referees and judges and stuff.
I'm like, go ahead, you gotta get back out there. Go on. I'll wait.
Much appreciated.
But it's funny. But yeah, so there you go. Why do you want to get rid of the Apex show? When are you going to run into the Cutman in the bathroom? or Herb's going in there, you know he's going to be in the cage. You could be that awkward guy that tries to start up a conversation while he's taking a piss.
It's so true. Maybe you want to call him out on his a call he made. You can do it right there.
Like, bro, I see you pissing away as you pissed away that call in the ring. Or you took a shit on that guy just like you're picking.
Oh, man.
Okay, I'm not condoning that at all, but it's funny to think about.
It's funny to think about.
But don't do that.
Yeah,
don't be that guy. Please don't be that guy.
Don't be that
Leave
guy.
The guy alone.
And certainly don't tell him that we told you that you should do that.
Don't do that. All right, hopefully everybody enjoys the rest of the holidays that's remaining. Hopefully in the next 72 hours I got to call fights. My voice will be completely back. We're not quite there yet, but we're getting there. But more than anything, let me just say thanks for listening.